Well, this is it. I'm leaving after today. I will come back, but I am looking forward to the next 4 months of rest and study, of renewal, of time with my family, of travel. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for your generosity and your understanding in making my sabbatical possible. I have no complaints about what's to come. Well, that's not true. To be honest, if I had my way, it would probably start a week earlier than was scheduled. The reason for that, of course, is today's lectionary readings. If you are listening carefully, you will have noticed that these are not the normal Jesus loves you and the earth is beautiful and good things come to those who pray readings. These are of a different sort, and they're a bit harder to deal with. There was, of course, the reading from Acts, in which the first Christian martyr is put to death for preaching Christ crucified. Now, you may have noticed his name was Stephen. And now, I know that you would not cast stones at your preacher, and that's a good thing, but still, maybe it's a little too personal for me. So we'll set aside the book of Acts for now and look at John. This is a reading, of course, that people find comfort in, that they find sustenance from, that strengthens people. It's often preached at funerals. You know how there's this wonderful image given by Jesus of the mansion. There's a room for all of us, a place to go. We will not be forgotten when we have passed on. We will be with God. These words meant so much to the first Christians, and they continue to mean so much to us today. So all's well for about the first half of the reading. Then we come to the part of the text that, to be honest, gives me and many other preachers the fits. And that is when Jesus says in verse 6, "I am the way and the truth and the life." Now, this is one of Jesus's I am statements as John recounts them. And that part is okay. We can get our arms around the idea of Jesus saying things about himself. But it's the following clause that gives us trouble. "No one comes to the Father except through me." No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, if you think about it, these are pretty bold words. It's either or. There is no in between here. I was reminded of this after I preached a sermon for a funeral some years ago. And one of the people who was in the congregation wrote me a letter afterwards. And he thanked me for celebrating the life of his deceased friend, and it was a great service, and he loved the music, and the prayers really moved him, but he had a problem with the text. And he had a problem in particular because he was Jewish. And my Jewish friend said, in no uncertain terms, that he felt excluded by these words. I have grappled with this letter for years. I have not found a place of comfort with it. The fact is that modern mainline Christians often have one article of faith, and it's that this passage is not true. God is for everyone, we say. God loves everyone, we say. So, Jesus is just one of many paths to God. Okay? There's a problem with that, though. And that is that we are denying what this text says. We're denying a central foundational claim of Christianity. Jesus, we're saying, is not the only way to God. And that is a valid claim to make. But it's not a Christian claim to make. So what are we to do? Do we pursue the all-inclusive, not really Christian approach? Or do we assume an approach that is markedly exclusionary, that leaves out some 5 billion people? Well, I've set up a couple of straw men for you here, haven't I? And you're expecting me to come up with some clever third path forward that will give us all a measure of satisfaction. I've got a confession for you. I don't know that I can do that. But let me offer this observation. One of the problems with the Christian faith is that we spend way too much time worrying about what other people are doing or thinking. Some of us here may have done that at some point. We may wonder how someone else is taking care of their kids. We may wonder how someone else is doing their job. We'll talk about them. We'll think about them. But guess what? God doesn't care what you are thinking about someone else. I think, to be honest, I'll qualify that. If you're starting to think hateful thoughts towards someone, God doesn't like that. But if you're worrying about someone else's behavior, that really isn't of interest to God. What God cares about is what you are doing, and what you are doing, and what I am doing. Maybe the way to deal with this passage isn't to think about what the other guy is up to and thinking, but instead is to worry about what I am thinking and what you are thinking. For each person to worry about his or her own way and then forget everything else. Think about the first part of that phrase, which a moment ago we suggested was fine. We could live with that. I am the way and the truth and the life. Really? Are we living our lives in a way that reflect that belief? Think about that. If Jesus is indeed the way and the truth and the life, we should be quaking in our boots. I know I have trouble living up to that standard. We preached recently on the early church as depicted in Acts. Do you remember what that congregation was like? It was a place that was besotted with God. It was drunk on God's love. And they prayed and they cared for one another. And they gave everything they had to the church so they could then be shared out with the poor. That was a place that believed, I am the way and the truth and the life. I'll make a proposition here. Very few people in the history of Christianity have been won over by a tract. You know, little pamphlets people hand out. They want you to read them, and then you'll all of a sudden accept Jesus and everything will be set. Oh, people have been threatened by them. People have been scared by those passages. But nobody's heart has been changed. People have come to the church. People have come to Christ because of what people do and not what they say. Think of that early church gathered in Jerusalem, a small sect, a bunch of weirdos, frankly. But something they did and experienced and had spoke to other people. And people wanted to join. And they wanted to be part of that Jesus movement. And it changed everything for them. Now, a few years ago, a guy named Stephen Prothero, a professor at BU Divinity School, wrote a book called God is Not One. And the proposition of this book was that there's a notion in today's world, particularly in the mainline church, that everybody in the world ultimately worships the same God. We have different ways of talking about him and describing him, but it's all the same God. Prothero disagrees with this. Prothero says that the different major religions have different conceptions of God and different understandings of reality. And we should acknowledge that. Because it's only through acknowledging our differences that we can actually begin to respect one another. And when we begin to respect one another, then, and only then, can we learn to get along. So, let's say we do that. I believe what I believe, you believe what you believe. You know what? That sounds a lot like what this church has been teaching for a very, very long time. You don't have to take some kind of faith test to join this congregation, do you? You stand up at the front, you say a few words, they're heartfelt. But I don't ask you, this congregation does not ask you to submit answers to a 39-question battery about theology. I know some of you are good, hardcore, Orthodox, Trinitarian Christians. And there are others of you who are trying to figure out what it means. And there's some of you, I suspect, who have a more expansive view. And guess what? It's up to you to decide what you believe, not me. I'm going to go back to Stephen for a moment. There he was, preaching, talking about how God was in Jesus. And you remember what happened to him, right? First they rushed him. And then they stoned him. I have a mixed reaction to this. I actually kind of like the fact that they were so moved by what he said. They had to take action. I don't care for the action they took, but at least they were moved to act. And I think about Stephen as he's being stoned, praying for the people who killed him. That is a very, very different approach to faith than that which says, you have got to believe as I believe. You have got to do as I do. Stephen was instead saying, God, I love you, and I want you to love these people. Now, At the end of John's lesson today, we heard that everybody who prayed to Jesus, if you ask in his name for anything, I will do it. Now that is a pretty broad promise. And now you think back to Stephen. And at first blush, I think, well, John's wrong. Because Stephen was killed. And surely he didn't want that. But what did Stephen want? Did Stephen want to be delivered from his persecutors? Did he want to be freed from the fate that was to befall him? I don't think he was looking for death. But I will suggest this. He wasn't looking for an easy deliverance. Stephen didn't want to be saved and then just have everything continue as it did before. Instead, he wanted things to change. And for the message of Jesus to get through. And if that's the case, then Stephen's prayer was answered. Because here we are, 2,000 years later, and there are 2 billion of us. The Lord knows we can't agree on much. But that is quite a legacy. And it's one that grew from somebody who believed that Jesus was the way and the truth and the life. Stephen was the first martyr, but of course was not the last. And there have been untold men and women over the years who have given everything for the faith. Now, when we hear the word martyr, now we, of course, think about suicide bombers and people who are doing awful things, betraying the God they claim to worship. But martyrs are something else. Martyrs are the people who believe with every bit of their being that God's promises are true. And I would ask you, as I will ask myself, to reflect on these people and what they have given us. I don't want anybody here to suffer any harm. But I am willing to ask that you're able to consider the possibility that maybe you will have to experience some discomfort and some unease to actually follow Jesus. There is no promise in the gospel that being a Christian will be easy. But there is a promise that there will be new life. So my hope going forward is that we will live as if Jesus were indeed the way and the truth